Welcome to the Future of Healthcare, Live with Intent podcast with Thomas Reichart and Justin Tomlinson, authors of Live with Intent and architects of the LWI Learning Pathway. Today, Thomas and Justin speak with Werner Boeing, CEO and co-founder at Advisory, board member and mentor. Werner is a thought leader on the forefront of digital health strategies transforming healthcare.
Man, it's great to be with you today. Thank you for joining us on our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And Werner, I feel lucky to have you with us today. One of the things I remember about you, and at least my perception of your brand is as the CIO of Roche Dia, and most of our listeners will recognize you more from that role. But to me, you've always been this person that has been curious and interested in innovating what's coming next and experimenting. You are the big experimenter, willing to take some risks and try new things. So to have you with us today is a great pleasure.
No, thank you, Justin. Thank you, Thomas, for having me.
And you know, maybe before we get into the digital health space and your areas of expertise, we could let our listeners just know a little bit more about you as a human being and to find out your story.
No, I'm happy to share. Actually, I am from a small town, but I come from an international place. And that happened, my parents bought building a house during the Cuba crisis. So I was born that's the age I am. And hence there was a cash shortage and they had to rent out the first floor of their semi-finished house. And they rented it out to British officers. So I grew up in a local town, but with well-traveled people, well-seasoned people. And at Christmas time, we got Christmas cards from Malaysia, from Singapore, from Hong Kong. Hardly anyone knew where that was, neither me. And that created lifelong relationships with people that in itself, I mean, military families have a very different lifestyle, prepared me for my expat life in a way, but also gave me friends that I would have never met. And one, his name is Andrew, I became the best man. And I didn't have realization that one day I become his best man. And he married in St. Paul's Cathedral and with all the bells and whistles that you can think of. And up to today, I would say it's one of the hardest tasks I ever had to master, to fulfill the duties of a best man in such a wedding. So I'm a small town, but with some very interesting connections that guided me up to today, to be open, to be curious, to learn about the different cultures and feel that there are many solutions to a problem. And it's not just the one dimension. And that's maybe also something I learned at school. I was privileged to be the first year of a new school that opened with new teachers, with a new philosophy about teaching, with new equipment. And over 40 years ago, I learned coding there. I made my first programs and also got exposed to a different curiosity, not just a kind of a T-shaped interest in knowledge, a little about a lot and something special, but interconnecting different domains. And for instance, language philosophy was something I got interested in. So I think the school kind of triggered a different perspective on knowledge, on exploration. And that served me through my entire life. To connecting domains, to learn is something until today. I'm that defines a lot of who I am today.
And where is that school?
That's in a small town near the Dutch border. Mm-hmm. So my mother was born in the Netherlands, and it was an experiment school. So we had multiple intelligence tests to pass. We had two or three different versions to learn English with not proper grammar learning, but looking at listening. And so we were kind of guinea pigs in how to teach. So it was an experiment, and I'm the result of the experiment.
Well, very successful experiment. And where did you go to university, and how did you make the bridge into healthcare?
To the dislike of my wife, I went to military service first, where I got first exposed also to healthcare. I was a paramedic and an ambulance driver. And then I moved to Berlin to study at the Technical University, also a non-T-shaped topic, economical engineering, it's called. So to combine like a Master of Business Administration and mechanical engineering, so connecting the dots. But if you studied in Berlin at that time, still the Cold War, you didn't need to go to the military service. So I did proper citizen as I am. I first went to military service, and then I studied in Berlin. And you know, the connection to healthcare was I would say, yes, I was exposed in the military to it. But then my wife, she's a medical doctor. My father-in-law, my mother-in-law are doctors. My sister is a nurse. But the real click came in earlier in my life. And I think sometimes pivotal moments in life are defining us. And it was when I was a little boy, 10 years old, I was together with my mom when she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And I remember that as like yesterday. And when somebody speaks about a patient journey, it was a literal walk between the disciplines. And after that, this was the first conscious disease that I recognized as a human being. And I had to do that also later on when friends of mine also were diagnosed with that disease. So I have to say, the interest in healthcare, you don't need to be motivated for it. In a way, life is teaching you about the importance of healthcare.
And did you become a caregiver for your mother then, even from that young age?
Well, it was an interesting constellation. After the initial diagnosis and treatment, at that time, there wasn't the great treatment options that you have today. She learned to deal with the disease and was very disciplined. And she even started a second education because she couldn't do physical work as such. So she went for an office job education as an adult. So she was doing the week away and I had to do the household. So I cooked for my father. I cleaned. I took household classes at school that was available. I learned knitting and cooking, and there are even newspaper articles about me advertising for the school, but also as a boy demonstrating a diversity and inclusiveness of interest before that topic was actually a public domain topic. So I was already having traits and interests that are beyond the typical stereotyping of boys.
Let's make the switch from cooking and knitting over to the military where you served. What did you learn in the military at the time where you served that served you well in your leadership capacities that you needed for your management and top management assignments later?
Actually, the military service, you getting exposed to society with all its facets. So if you go in high school, you have a subset of reality together with you. In military, you deal with everything. And the good and the bad and the ugly. So there were a lot of learnings in there, learning your limits, being in situation that you're uncomfortable with, more than I ever wanted, but also to deal with people with a significant different background. And finding a way, but the most important thing in military is how do you not getting bored? Yeah, because that's most of the time you're just in between. It wasn't the biggest source of excitement for me, if I may say so.
Thank you. This morning in the morning briefing, we listened to the CEO of Siemens sharing how it was to shift away from tremendous corporate responsibility into a different life. And I was thinking of you. How is it like to step away from Big Pharma into advisory? I mean, now in a double pack, right? With Dr. Susanne Boeing, your wife, next together serving with you in the advisory work. But how is it? How is it like on a day-to-day level, you know, when you get to work and now think about advisory rather than Big Pharma?
Yeah, no, it's something I consciously selected, but it was a process of getting into it. So I came about realization that life has phases. Yeah, and we are thinking models and approaches that are suitable for certain phases of our life. And the worst thing is if you don't realize that a phase is about to end and you continue to apply the same patterns, you know. But I was clear that I wanted to focus on things that I'm really good at, that I really enjoy. And moving away from a leadership paradigm that in the future I was defining my own leadership, right or wrongly, as seeing a bit the future and trying to build a bridge between the future that I see and the organization and motivate the organization to close it and have their own initiatives. But seeing the future, I saw as a core responsibility as a leader. An advisor has a total different role, which is liberating. It is driven by listening, yeah, deep listening, deep empathy for the person, not about your ambition. So it allows me to look at a total different lens using the context that I have learned about the industry, the technology, and all those things, but totally reframing this from the way I look at it, how thinking that serving can be such a fulfilling role, supporting people in this precious role, and digital healthcare can be a very lonesome role for leaders, and being there in different capacity, but not as the person who tells how it will be, adding other perspectives. That's a real learning and an exciting discovery for me to be blessed having discussion with such great set of different leaders, from startups with zero revenue to people with some revenue, some 100 million revenues to a billion revenue. So dealing with leaders in those different areas, but all sharing the desire to leave a mark in digital healthcare, it's just a blessing. So every morning when you get up, it's something different, a different person, a different situation. Is very stimulating from a personal but also from a business perspective.
So in Evisory that you founded, where you're being a digital advisor for creating the future of healthcare, I understand you're looking at a number of advisory fields, right? From digital biomarkers to the all-enabled clinical decision support systems, augmented reality, just to name a few of them. I'd be interested, which area do you see the biggest surprise potential that will surprise patients and society and maybe even decision makers? Where do you think, which one is the hidden giant or the sleeping giant that people are just very slowly getting aware of?
Well, so what I wish to feel, but I'm still not feeling, but I still start with that. Prevention, everybody agrees, but nothing gets done. Yeah, and this is something I hope it gets to a different level of attention. And why is that? There's a time disconnect between the investment into prevention. If you look at it from a financial, from a health outcome perspective, you need to offer resources. But the outcome, and you will see only with a significant time lag. Hence, for instance, in the US, where people are changing payers when they have a new employment, then the healthcare companies, the payers that may have limited interest to invest in prevention, because there's a high likelihood that you don't benefit from the investment into it. So So this is a typical contradiction between the disconnect. You have a solution, but the incentive system isn't supporting the solution. So you need systemic change. And many of the diseases and the disease burden comes to chronic diseases, comes by diseases that could be preventable. So one of the biggest opportunities is to realign the incentive system and use digital help, find measurable outcomes and interchange between different players. But secondly, also humans know what's helping and they still don't do it. I'm a victim myself of that. So how could digital healthcare also help everyone to more regularly do the things that you know is good for you? So I see the two angles of a disconnect, that why prevention hasn't been delivering at the level as it should. So that's one, I really hope for society, for individuals, that digital will help to close that gap. The second biggest one, you see a lot of innovation at targeted solution. So I call them the nutcrackers. So a single use case and you focus on it and you demonstrate value and you become the next unicorn if you're a startup. Fantastic. But if you look at healthcare system at large, many things can only be addressed in a more systemic way. Sometimes you need an ecosystem, different players. If you think about like if you want to have a treatment that it needs a medical device, it maybe needs a biomarker, it needs a pharmacological, it needs additional services. So it needs different players to come together to create a differentiated patient experience. But some changes need broader changes. So if you look at the JP Morgan, Amazon, and Berkeley, the Haven project that has been stopped. Sometimes you need to address systemic healthcare changes at a far larger level in order to create really significant progress. So these are the hidden giants that will come. There will be at healthcare systemic level innovation and transformation coming. They will build on those nutcracker portfolio of solutions, but it needs also larger plays. And the second area I think that might happen are the beauty of small countries. I do believe that the Baltics, the Nordics, Singapore, smaller places where a systemic change of healthcare system might take place with clear guidance from governments, with rules which allow at scale a more transparent and clear exchange, maybe solving some of the underlying issues like citizen identity and trustworthy exchange of data and other elements. So I see these are the big problems, either big corporations in different players from technology, from insurance, financials, healthcare coming together, or within smaller countries, those end-to-end experimentation on an entire healthcare system will, as a single thing, will deliver the biggest transformation. And then there's so many other things among the nutcrackers that each of them, each individual one, and if you speak to the startup founders, how they speak about their use case, if you speak to a digital leader of an existing company, how they are in love with the problem. I think we need all of those entrepreneurs to be successful, and each of them are great and critical, important initiatives.
Werner, thank you for sharing your insight and your perspective. I heard the systemic change a few times, right? And the digital prevention, especially for chronic diseases. And current practice is, as a patient, I don't see the doctor 99.9% of the time, right? So in changing a chronic disease, the checkpoints, the points where you actually speak to the doctor, the majority of the time there is no connection and there is no data points. How does that connect to healing or changing or creating breakthroughs in chronic diseases?
Yeah. there are different ways to look at chronic diseases to prevent them, or most approaches right now is to deal better with them. So let's take the example that you highlighted. In many chronic diseases, there's a shortage of HCPs. There's even, you know, sometimes pretty difficult journeys for patients to find the right expert at the right time. The intervals of being looking at you is more a data point than a data series topic. And if you look at certain neurological diseases, maybe the patient alone is not the best source of data points. Maybe you need a caregiver as well to complement a comprehensive picture that allows the treatment to be optimized. So I think that's where digital kicks in, digital biomarkers kicking in, complemented with platforms that allows safe and meaningful exchange between the different stakeholders, the caregiver, the patient, and allowing for rich context when then there is actually an interaction between the HCP and the patient, and or even the selecting the point when that is needed, selecting when a physical connection has to happen or a virtual one is sufficient. I see a lot of progress in that field with significant impact. So digital biomarkers are typically a prerequisite. Finding meaningful digital biomarkers are super, super important. And it's one you asked me beforehand, I think meaningful, clinically relevant with medical efficacy defined digital biomarkers are absolutely, the center of the storm. And then you can augment with platform capabilities. You may fulfill the vision of closed-loop therapy, having a medical device company together with a pharma company and the digital biomarkers, changing the course how you deal with a chronic disease with a patient-specific and in the moment online specific treatment of that patient. I think that's going to be, it's a very realistic to come in many diseases. This is a real realistic benefit that we can expect from digital healthcare, not in 10 years' time, not in 15 years' time. This reality is to come far sooner.
What strikes me about this conversation, Werner, is it's obvious that you have a tremendous grasp of the big picture and the whole ecosystem and how the system works. And you have a really good sense and ideas about what's coming, how fast it's coming. But if I flip back to this new role you have as an advisor, if I heard it correctly, that's actually not what people are seeking your advice on, the future and what's going to happen, as much as being a sounding board or listening to them and the challenges they face on the ground. I'm not sure that I followed that correctly, because it seems to me like I would be coming after you for where's all this going and what's the next play?
Well, I think, Justin, very good catch. Yeah. So this is my inner demon, you know, because I am who I am based on what I believed in, and my brain is still wired and thinking about the future, and it hasn't changed. And I started my career at a digital think tank, so over 30 years ago. So I'm wired that way. The question is, what's the priority? The priority is to be really empathic, to think through the lens of the person or the team that you're dealing with, thinking about what's needed in the moment, what's needed next, rather than cookie cutting how the future may unfold and coming with a... So it's personalized. It is a mixture between, if you will, the soft side, coaching, mentoring, content on how healthcare and technology connecting areas, but it's not taking the lead. It's not taking the call for someone else. And that's about pace, about how you word things. So it's much more subtle, the difference, but I'm very conscious about that. And this podcast, you ask me about that, my view. When I'm in discussions, I try to use a different metaphor that I find is describing where where I am in my life at the moment. So I became conscious about mindfulness and meditating, and maybe some people saying, yeah, that's crazy. But it was really important to me. And I think about myself like standing in a river. And every day, fresh water comes to me. I'm not looking back. I'm not looking too much in the future. But I'm working with the energy that is there in the moment. And that's the concerns, the opportunities, perspective of the people I'm dealing with. That's what I'm dealing, trying to use the energy that's there. But I'm not creating totally out of the blue something. So I work with the energy. That includes also my perspectives. But it's not the starting point. It's not an objective in itself. It is an element of the support that I'm offering.
And is that something you knew going in, that it was going to be like that, or have you discovered it in the doing of it?
I would say the latter. It's also dealing with those incredible leaders, you know, serial startup entrepreneurs, or I don't know what's harder, to be a digital leader in an established enterprise or an entrepreneur in a startup. Both has its own profile and challenge. But I learned so much from them. Yeah? So it's really it's not a single way. It's a really enriching two-way street. And one of my first clients created actually the logo for what I'm doing. It's Advisory Plus. Mm-hmm. And what you're hitting at is, yes, I do also still some future looking. I offer more than just advisory. I'm also sometimes offering perspective, but finding that in the balance and in sync with the moment, that's what I'm trying.
I think that's a tremendous insight, because in the work that we do, Thomas and I often observe and talk about how people are so excited about their future. They have ideas about it. They're trying to get their hands around it. But somehow there's a gap between that future and what needs to be done today. And it creates quite a bit of churn. And so to be able to help teams both keep things moving forward today and keep an eye on the future and moving in the right direction, that's actually quite difficult.
It is. And that's the respect that I give to all the leaders. You know, it's so challenging to fulfill those different callings. You know, I always say being a digital leader in a company can be a very lonesome job. You know, everybody owns the perspective, of digital and the promised land. Everybody signs onto it. But on the delivery, it gets shorter, the list of the people who have been held accountable. It's almost get personal. Who's leading this? You know, if something takes longer and it's more difficult and maybe cannibalize an existing product line's revenue. So who did that? Yeah. So I have huge respect for, and we need all the leaders, and we need all of them to be successful, because healthcare in first place is actually not digital. It's real. There are nurses at HCP. They have to do an incredible job every day. And they deserve a better working environment. They actually deserve an environment that they love, that helps them to complement them, especially with the shortage already that we have on staff in healthcare, with the aging profile that is coming. So we need all the entrepreneurs on digital to be very successful in order to support the people who do the real care. Because a robot and an algorithm doesn't do the real delivery, the face that you look in that tells you then what's going on. So that's the reason why I'm passionate about supporting those leaders in the best way I can, because all of them deserve support.
So you're defining and executing, or helping execute strategy, and you're also working in the field of strategy consulting. I mean, strategy has been a part of your job for such a while. How did you see, and how do you see, the advisory service for strategy change? And how is the model changing? And how is what clients need changing as you do it now? What have been the things that you've observed over the last years? What do clients need now that they didn't used to need before?
Yeah. So I'm a certified strategist, so to speak. So I was in charge of strategy planning at one of my companies, and I learned the real diligent process, because something strategy is a creative process. Yeah. And it just is some fluffy stuff. But it's actually a diligent thinking process that leads to the action that you need to take. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So nowadays, with the emphasis on learning, faster learning, you can make a case to say, do we still need a 10-year strategy, a 3-year strategy in the way that we thought we needed, and in order to feel good, you know? And also, how have leaders been looked at? What's your strategy? It was almost like your credibility as a leader was to have the defining answers on your strategy. Phase A, B, C, step 1, 2, 3, this outcome here you can measure. It was almost like a connection between the predictability of the future and our expectations towards leaders. Now we say, learning is actually the key differentiating factor. Can you learn and apply learning faster and at scale? So maybe strategy becomes the articulation of the corporate learning strategy, the ability to adopt, the ability to select the right risks that you take where you learn, the diligent process that you are able to stop, that you have different avenues defined before and that you might take. So you are prepared and thinking through, but you really are open. Also, the way you explain it to the organization, you're not explaining it as a predictive model. That's the way what's going to happen. But you share the risk and the concern, the possibilities. You have to totally adjust. It's not a top organization level PowerPoint cascade down, and here it is, and now you guys execute, and I assess you organization on your ability to do what I told you to do. So it's a much more fragile, much more dynamic sense. So I think the role of strategy is changing. Yeah, and so coming back to your question on advisory versus consultancy, is typically, advisory boards are meeting 3 to 4 times per year. But then you need to have to create the context. So the meeting starts with getting everybody on board. And then you may pick something out. So, but you lose a lot of the time to stay, get everybody in the context. So what I think is important, that leaders, also in the way they complement each other, complement their leadership, for instance, with an external resource like an advisory board, it needs to have a continuous component. Targeted connection where you keep the context alive, or on-demand ability to do a deep dive. But with someone who is with you, you don't have to start with A, B, C, and then you become to Z. So I think it's be what's needed when it's needed, but not more. I think that's advisory, because I'm not advocating to start big, gigantic projects. That's also sometimes needed. What I'm advocating is that strategy processes are owned by the organization, that everybody feels ownership, that you really engage the organization from a situation analysis and the sensing. Because otherwise, how could you then keep them in tune with things go A, B, C? This has to be a more collective learning experience, but still leaders need some support in that. And I think that's what I believe helps most, is keeping the context and being more on demand, available when you need it, but not more.
Yeah. While you do that, your clients are yet in another big transformation, and yet the next wave is coming of the next transformation. What signals are you getting about transformations in healthcare today? What surprises you, or what signals are you receiving that could help us to understand that at a different level?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And so first, I think the former CEO from IBM wrote a book saying, "Can elephants dance? Can they? Can they in healthcare?" So I think a lot of the transformations in healthcare, because healthcare is late, I mean, in everything. I mean, compared to other industries, really lagging. There's no way to hide from that, you know. So I started in the automotive industry somewhat 30 years ago, and we had a department called digital manufacturing. Yeah, we had AI, we had two supercomputers, and we had robotics and lathe and everything 30 years ago. So I think now the question is, with the emphasis on learning or agile, whatever symbol you take as an example for moving from the long-term, carefully planned activities, moving into a different culture, into different operating models, it's a huge challenge. And I think in some part of the value chain, life science companies are really good. They always have been in terms of the research and development and how they dealt with licensing, mergers and acquisitions. I think they demonstrated being on their feet, being flexible. I think in this part, I see, yes, there are new things being experimented with, but that's pretty good. I think in other areas, it's still changing the culture of something that worked so well. All the concerns that you may have in terms of very valid concerns, like, you know, let's be, you know, compliant and trying to be sensitive to society expectations, to data privacy and all of those things, you know. They're all good reasons maybe to not go as fast as you would need. And so this careful risk-taking outside of the pharma, in pharma research, I mean, that's the life science industry is a master of risk-taking. I mean, they are the role model of risk-taking among all the industries, I think, at least one of them. And the rest of the value chain, I think that's where also startups get frustrated with life science companies. It's really, really difficult. It's not so difficult to be acquired by a pharma company, but doing business as a startup with a life science company, that creates sleepless nights for startup founders, because the back office guys, I don't know what to do with startups. And you need the different mindset of startups challenging how to deal with data, thinking about data platforms, about services, about combination, augmenting digital services with their core product, with in medtech or even also with classical life science product. So I think we need the startups as a source of disruption, but they cannot deliver on the full promise if they're not partnering, if they're not playing together. So this interaction between startups and life science, beyond being acquired, that has to be improved. I have one startup founder in my head in the moment, and he says, "Werner, I spoke to one pharma company, and they acknowledge, you know, it's easier to buy a company for multiple billions than to get the contract ready with you, little startup."
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is maybe those partnerships are going to happen without an acquisition. You know, so far the big life sciences company could just buy the different companies they want, but maybe the model is moving much more towards, maybe I don't have to own you to partner with you.
Yeah. Maybe Justin is also, maybe it's better that you don't own you because you have been in contact with that other partner because they're different and you want to keep them different. And that's, I mean, there's no perfect answer. Can you build an internal startup? Can you change an existing line of business, transform it? Can you do an external innovation project? And you need to do all of them. But coming back to the question, can elephant dance? Only if you play on all those three well. Mm-hmm. Just transforming your existing core business and hoping that it's fast enough, I have my question mark, you know, because the current model is so good. It's so damn good. And it's very difficult to move away from something with a promise that something else is coming. And beyond the symbols, with beyond the buzzwords, changing the culture is going to be, we're all being conditioned on compliance and for right reasons. But if you start in a startup to invent solving a problem and you start with the restrictions that are imprinted in your thinking, maybe you're missing one or the other trick.
So you just packed your backpack and got ready for the adventure of starting and operating your advisory business. And if one looks at your advisory website, next to your services, the point giving back is not some kind of sub point lost somewhere, but it's prominent. It's right there and with quite a bit of story and importance, if I interpret it right. Where is the connection to with your services, with your intent and giving back, and why is that important to you?
The first, I think we need to look what happened with our life. And my life wouldn't have been possible without the mentoring and the support that I got in multiple phases in life. It started at school. I come from a working class background. There was a teacher who understood the struggle for someone to defining a way into the future. And he came home to my father and explained to him, because he also did came from a working class background, and he told him, let your son study. And that continued through my life. I had multiple people that in certain moments believed into me more than I did myself. Without that support, and with some I'm still in really in contact, yeah. And I'm really honored, blessed, and thankful for that. So all the people who are at a different point of their career, most of us need a good advice from time to time. You know, a good advice is priceless. So that's one thing. I want to allow other people to potentially, if I can, if it's meaningful, what I have to offer, to create similar experiences for others. Yeah. And that's also a two-way street. Yeah. So doing that is very fulfilling and but it's also something I learn about myself, but also content. Yeah. So it's a rich human desire to do helping. And that's bliss to me. The second thing I do believe is more logical. You also giving back could need structure, but I'm with my wife, we are two. How do you scale? It's very difficult. So I have a couple of mentees, yeah, but I can't have hundreds, beside the fact that I wouldn't have interest for hundreds of people at the moment to be mentored by me. So I selected also scaling thoughts on giving back. So I joined a open research project on the future of healthcare and focusing on how it has data to look like and the dealing with data in those different scenarios. And so multi-stakeholders from different players, pharma companies, state-funded agencies, private companies, all a mixture of people, HCPs, we're all spending our time developing something that will be available for everyone. It will be publicly available, allowing maybe a startup to get context. Maybe they can't, you know, do such a strategic exercise in the diligence and with all the, we do that for somebody else and for multiple people. So that's a way to scale. Or I joined a startup accelerator. So I'm mentoring pro bono. I'm in a panel helping the tech company to select the startup that they like to deal with. But also I'm helping at the moment, I'm mentoring a quantum physics cooling company, defining their business model. And so that's the different ways of giving back. It's doing, you know, what I had the pleasure and the honor to receive, but also thinking about how can giving back scale? And I believe sharing is caring. And the best thing I have is sharing my time, sharing my experience. And this is really, really important to me. Very important to me. Yeah, in life, why are we here for? You know, so if I can touch one or two people with that and I can help, and if somebody would think about me like I'm thinking about my teacher, my first business boss, then everything would be worth it.
And the added bonus of doing it all with your wife, what is that like?
Yeah, I get that question quite often. So there's some amongst the people, there's some skeptics that are thinking about doing a venture together with your wife. And I am really honored and blessed. My wife supported me. We have been in multiple countries bringing up children, and she's a medical doctor. So we were always thinking, and she thought more finding a business since a longer time, finding a business outside what we were doing before. So nothing to do what we do, but we building a venture that's outside of what we thought we are. And, you know, the idea of this was born, and it's a great blessing to, after 30 years in a career, to doing something together that we both care for. You know, she's a medical doctor, and helping to better healthcare in a small way. I mean, if our efforts are doing something, and for instance, one activity that we're involved in, if the one client idea gets through, then we can help such a large number of patients to have a better life, and then it would be all worth it. So, and doing that together is great. And then you just rediscover yourself in different angles. And I got curious about an HR leader at Roche that told me about an experiment at another company that people combine their CV. They apply for one role, but they combine their role, their degrees, their experiences, and they organize themselves when somebody's going to work or not, you know, and how do they do the work. And that was still running in my, so how can we do something together? And something this is really a fantastic experiment as well. And changes the dinner topics, changes the way we look at what's going on, and bringing inclusiveness on thinking and who we are beyond the love and care that you have also to the topics that you care for. And it's another dimension of connectedness.
It seems to me like you've both been preparing your whole life for this. And rather than retire and fade off into the sunset, you get to continue making a meaningful contribution that brings you closer together, which is what most people look towards retirement for anyway. And now you get the benefit of both. I think it's fantastic.
No, I think my wife and I have been meant to be together because we are just 1 year and 1 day apart in terms of our births. So already in this process, somebody was thinking about the two of us.
Perfect. Well, we should have invited her to come on as well, and then we'd get the full package, the joint CV. But I'm more than happy and so excited that we could have you on and share you and what you're doing with all of our listeners. Very inspiring, Werner.
Thank you.
No, thank you, guys. And it's a real pleasure to be on your platform. And hopefully many people who are thinking, tinkering around about digital health and looking at the different profiles that you have in your podcast, which is really encouraging to listen to the people's perspective, maybe they also become a people, because it needs many people. It needs a village, because it's there's so much value to be created, but it's damn hard. Hmm. And that's so it needs a lot of people who are passionate about and people who are connecting. And I think you guys are doing a great service to building a community of people and encouraging others to join the effort.
Thank you.
Thank you, Werner. It was a delight listening to you and hearing your thoughts and most of all your perspectives. Many thanks.
Now let's turn to Thomas and Justin for a brief reflection on today's discussion.
What really impresses me about Werner and his wife is oftentimes people that have such prestigious, I guess you would say, roles and experiences at this point in their life kind of step back and take it easy. Maybe they're on one or the other board, but they don't stay all in with the mindset of contribution. And how do I bring all of that life experience and really leverage it and grow it and give it all back. And to bring that kind of energy when you could just retire and relax. I love that. That's inspiring to me.
I'm inspired by his sense of contribution. And I'm also inspired. I mean, I got to say, it's so much fun doing this podcast with you, Justin. It's like we meet the greatest people, right? But he is so self-actualized. He so is in focus. You know, there's the saying that if you want to go outside and scale and go broad and have a message, you first of all have to do some self-examination. I mean, he has done his homework. Every question, every defining moment, he's got his answers crystal clear. It's so exciting to listen to see how clear he is in his thinking, in his approach, and in his contribution. Chapeau.
Yeah, and maybe one last thought for me that I'm taking away is the ability to be passionate about the future and executing in the now. That I thought was an interesting and important insight. To all of our listeners, thank you for listening. Our desire is to explore and contribute to the future of healthcare by applying the principles of Live with Intent.
For more information on the future of healthcare, Live with Intent, go to www.livewithintent.eu.